Day 10. How are you doing with your New Year's resolutions? Are you still holding on? Did you make a resolution that involves your finances? Good morning. It's On Your Money. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, filling in for Joy. We've got Jill Gonzalez with us. She's an analyst and spokesperson for Wallet Hub, which recently posted 10 financial resolutions for 2017 and how we can accomplish them. Jill, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So a Fidelity investment survey shows that about a third of Americans make a resolution here in 2017 about their finances. Of that group, about half say they want to save more, 28% plan to pay down debt, and 16% want to spend less. Does anything surprise you here about these goals?
Absolutely not. You know, financial resolutions are the second most popular after weight loss and fitness goals. So a lot of people are making financial resolutions this year. And like you said, that doesn't necessarily mean the same thing for everyone.
And then a University of Scranton study showed that only 8% of people who make New Year's resolutions wind up achieving them. So how can you help us make and keep our New Year's resolutions regarding finance?
It really goes back to being realistic as you're making any goals. But, you know, especially when you're looking forward to 2017, thinking about what you want to accomplish, if you want to save more, if you want to pay off debt, doing so and really making a realistic goal is half the battle in terms of keeping it.
So talk to me about what realistic means. What should we do here to make a goal that is actually attainable?
Sure. So going forward, I think a popular word right now is budget. It's all about making a realistic budget that you can actually stick to. And the best way to do that is to gather up all of your bills from the past few months, make a list of your recurring expenses, and then rank them in order of importance. So obviously necessities like housing, food, healthcare are going to take the top spots. But as you get down to the bottom of your list, that's where you can start cutting from or at least decreasing the spend there.
Well, that also isn't a really fun thing. It can be a really scary thing to know the reality of what's going in and what's going out. How can you make budget more approachable for people?
I think that's the important part here. So I think a lot of people kind of think of a budget, they think of a number, they set it and forget it, and then month after month, they're not reaching their goal. And I think that is ultimately what scares people, you know, that fear of not being able to get what you're doing and that fear of failure. So that's why, you know, lay everything out on the line. Again, gather your bills, see in actuality what you're spending your money on. And then, you know, you can set an actual number. It might not be as small as you were thinking, or it might not look like you were thinking. But this way, when you look back every month, you're actually hitting it.
And Wallet Hub developed these 10 resolutions, and we'll get more into them in a moment here. But first, how did Wallet Hub come up with these resolutions? And are they just basic principles that we should abide by, or is it something deeper going on here with these resolutions?
We actually talked to a lot of academic experts here. We talked to professors at business schools, professors of psychology here to really get behind the thinking and the goal-setting procedures, and also people who are looking at environmental studies, again, more psychology and technology professors. So we looked at them in tandem with these professors to actually see if these goals were realistic, and again, how to really frame them to get in that mindset of resolution setting.
We're talking about your financial resolutions on this week's edition of On Your Money with Jill Gonzalez. By the way, Kevin McKinley is away this week. Jill Gonzalez is here to break down a number of interesting financial resolutions and why they're worth keeping. We want to hear from you. What resolutions did you make regarding your finances in 2017, and how is it going? 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Now, getting into these 10 resolutions, let's go with number one. We should thoroughly review our credit reports and sign up for credit monitoring. Let's not talk about the credit monitoring right now, but this is more than just looking up our credit score, is it not? Which will, you know, we can talk about more later, but what exactly should we be looking for with our credit reports?
One in four credit reports actually have inaccuracies on them. So if you're wondering why your credit score isn't as high as you thought it should be, or, you know, if it's not going up even though you're paying your bills on time, you're being responsible with your money, et cetera, there might actually be an error or an inaccuracy on your report. So there's a good idea here to check out your report from any one or all three of the major credit bureaus and actually go through, make sure that all of the inquiries have been made by you, make sure that all the accounts are, in fact, your accounts. A lot of people with common names actually have some duplicate accounts that are not even theirs on their report that might be dragging down their credit. So thoroughly review your credit. You should be doing it once every year. If you haven't done it for a while or ever, now is the year to do it.
And our regular On Your Money guest, financial planner Kevin McKinley, has recommended we look at one report from one of the agencies, and a few months later, look at a report from a different agency, and then a few months goes by, get a report from a third agency, and repeat this process every year. How do you suggest we go about accessing our credit reports?
Absolutely. Well, now you can, yes, get them from the actual bureaus themselves. A lot of the times it's actually going to cost you money. There's completely free ways to be doing this now. Credit monitoring is certainly one of them. You can view your credit report weekly, monthly, or daily, depending on what free service you use. So it's not something that you should be paying for anymore. We're already going to be talking about saving money and getting out of debt later. So why spend more money on something that really, it's free of charge now.
So there's this other resolution here to pay. Second resolution is to pay our bills right after getting our paycheck. How many people don't do this?
Most people do not do this. And now it's easier than ever to actually put this into action. So this kind of goes along with making a budget, sticking to it, and a good way to make sure that you pay your bills right after you receive your paycheck is to set up automatic monthly payments from a deposit account so that you know exactly when you're being paid, and then a couple days later, exactly when your bills are going to be paid automatically. So automatic monthly payments are something that are so easy to set up now, really the click of a button. You don't have to be calling anyone anymore, and a few people do it. So that's a tool to definitely take advantage of this year.
And how much damage can late payments do to our credit score?
Most of the time, any huge chunk of your credit score has to do with your payment history. So about 35% of your overall score tracks right back to your payment history. If you're making late payments, if you're getting sent to collections, those are really the things that can drag your points down really overnight.
We're talking with Jill Gonzalez, who's here from Wallet Hub. She's an analyst and spokesperson for Wallet Hub, talking about your personal finance resolutions in 2017. Let's go to a call. Jeff from Green Bay. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. My question would be, I'm in fairly decent financial shape, I think, but I do believe a budget would help to solidify that for me. My question is, do you know of any banks that have an online presence with a actual budgeting function where I can really kind of keep track of things in one spot?
And Jill, what about banks that do that particularly well?
Yeah, two that come to mind here are Capital One and Discover. So they have features, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Mint or anything like that, that actually track your spending, so that you can look back and see exactly where your money went. This is for debit cards, this is for checking accounts, this is for credit cards as well. So you can actually track across your different accounts where the bulk of your spending is going, and that's a good procedure too if you have credit cards that give you, you know, 6% cash back on grocery, 3% cash back on this, to actually track your spending there and make sure that you're following the best procedures for your rewards too.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for your call. And WalletHub did a study that showed the average household with credit card debt would owe $8,400 by the end of 2016. And since it's going to be difficult to pay that off in one fall swoop, could you offer a resolution here, number three, which is to repay 20% of our credit card debt? Why 20%?
So 20% is a really good number to shoot for here, and we just thought of this on average as that household having about $8,400 just in credit card debt alone. So this isn't your mortgage, your student loans, et cetera. So instead of vowing to pay all of that off by the end of the year, again, we wanted to set a realistic goal here. 20% of that $8,400 is just under $1,700, so it's under $2,000 that if you divide that over the course of 12 months, it's monthly payments of $140. So that is a very realistic goal when you, again, break it down to that 20% limit. Then when you break that down further at a monthly goal, it's under $150, which is doable for many, many families.
What would you say if someone, some family, could afford to pay more than 20% this year? Should they do it?
Absolutely. If you know that you can pay more than the 20% of your credit card debt, then go for that. That's really paying yourself first, especially if you have high-interest credit cards. That figure was on a card with 0% on balance transfers, which is also definitely a good idea if you know that you're spending a lot on interest. But if you do have high-interest cards and you don't have a balance transfer card as an option, then, of course, try to repay more than 20% of that debt, because that, even more important than savings, is really going to decrease that interest payment.
We're talking about your financial resolutions on this week's edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley is away. Jill Gonzalez is here to break down a number of interesting financial resolutions and why they're worth keeping. Jill's an analyst and spokesperson for WalletHub. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's hear from you, 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the financial resolution you set for yourself in 2017? We'll get to them right after this break here on the Ideas Network.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
A recent survey by the National Endowment for Financial Education finds that nearly half of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. Among them, nearly a quarter blame credit card debt for their lack of a savings fund. We're exploring New Year's resolutions to improve our financial position in this hour of On Your Money. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy. So how did your financial resolutions work out for you last year? Are you changing your approach this year in 2017? Join the discussion at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. WalletHub analyst Jill Gonzalez stays with us. WalletHub recently posted a blog with 10 financial resolutions for 2017. So let's pick up with the resolution number four, use different credit cards for everyday purchases and debt. What's the thinking behind this strategy?
Yeah, the island approach should remind people of Hawaii. So yes, they're all related, but they're completely separate islands. So they're a chain here. And the island approach involves using different credit cards for everyday purchases. So say you have one card for everyday purchases. If you have a lot of grocery spending or gas spending, that's where the bulk of your cash back would be coming from. Then you have another card for debt, a balance transfer card that hopefully has a 0% APR for that revolving debt. And right now, there's great deals for them. You can get them up to 21 months, 0%. So that's certainly something to look into. So use those cards separately so that, A, you can track your spending. B, that everyday purchase card, you want to be paying that off in full, hopefully by the end of every month, so that you're staying debt-free while paying off your current debt at the lowest possible rate.
But are there any downsides to having multiple credit cards if we're in debt?
Actually, the golden rule here is to have up to three credit cards if you know that you can use them responsibly. So again, one card for everyday purchases, one card for revolving debt. If you have another card that is maybe for travel, et cetera, that's actually a better strategy. One, it's good to have multiple lines of credit on your credit report that actually makes your score higher. And two, it's cheaper for you to be using these different cards for different things.
And how do you feel about retail cards? We get asked at the checkout almost every time about taking out a card. And especially if we do a lot of shopping at a particular place and you can earn rewards or discounts on what we buy, how do you feel about those?
Retail cards are a good strategy if you are going to be shopping at that one store frequently. Again, you usually can't use them for more than one store. They're pretty brand specific. There are some great ones out there that do offer ongoing rewards as well as a great initial bonus. Target has a great card. Amazon has a great card as well, where on every purchase you actually get a 5% discount. So those are good deals. The only time that you should steer clear or be wary of them, usually around the holiday season, so we just got out of that, but they offer what's called deferred interest, which is not the same as just a 0% card for 6 to 12 months. If, say, you buy an $800 TV that you then have $20 left on after the 6-month zero interest period, you actually would be paying interest because it has been deferred on that entire $800 rather than the $20 that you still owe. So that is the only situation that retail cards significantly differ than regular credit cards.
Let's go to the phones with Kay from Richland Center. Hi, Kay.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling to make suggestions with the idea that prevention is always better than cure. And I realize this doesn't work for people who are already in a financial mess. But several things that we do, I think, has been helpful throughout our entire marriage, one of which is keeping track all the time of what we're spending and where it goes. I actually now am doing that on a spreadsheet, and we have several categories. Everything we spend is listed as we spend it. We also use credit cards extensively, mostly those that give cash back. And that way you can apply those cashback payments to any credit card bills. Most important is try to pay the cards off fully each month. I think one thing that is a real important idea is always to set money aside for yourself for the future. And the theme of that is to pay yourself first.
I want to jump in here, Kay. I'm wondering, do you designate responsibilities? Do you divvy them up between you and your spouse on who does what in managing each dollar and where it goes?
Yes, he tends to take care of all the insurance bills and big things that come up, and I take care of the day-to-day things. Any really huge bill, like a new furnace, we tend to split it. It's a little more onerous than what most people want to do, probably, but the financial planner in him is the problem.
Jill Gonzalez, how would you respond to this way that they approach their finances?
I would say prevention, like you said, Kay, is always better here. I think a lot of people that are making these financial resolutions, unfortunately, have already, you know, seen some areas where they could save, where they want to pay off debt, et cetera. So definitely want to offer them all. But you're absolutely right. I mean, keeping track of your spending, I hope you can see then what you need to change for the future, you know, mistakes that you might have made 1 month, where you can maybe fix things or shimmy things around the next. I think that's a great idea. And now, hopefully, we have apps that can help us with those things. You know, it's easier to track now more than ever. I think that's a great idea.
And making it a team effort, you know, it can be a team resolution as well on personal finances. But sometimes one person is more gung-ho about it than another.
That's absolutely right. And I think that might be where the tracking comes into play as well here. So, you know, hopefully seeing where one person is spending, where the other might be able to lead by example. I think that's definitely a good idea. You know, you can kind of be each other's buddy, make sure that you're both doing as best you can, not just in January, but every month of 2017.
Well, another resolution in Wallet Hub's 10 is a figure from the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, which said that roughly half of Americans do not have a rainy day fund. This seems, you know, kind of obvious to have one, but since so many people lack one, Jill, why should we have emergency savings?
Yeah, this also goes along with what Kay was saying. Pay yourself first. You know, a good way to do that is to set up another automatic payment to a check or to a savings account like it's another bill. You know, like it's not even a question that you should have some type of rainy day or emergency fund here. Ultimately, years down the road, having 12 to 18 months take-home income would be a great goal. But this year, aim for 1 month. By the end of 2017, try to have 1 month take-home salary in a rainy day fund that you can lean on for emergencies, for a surprise loss of a job, for a family emergency here as well. So that's very important here, and more than half of Americans don't have anything of the sort.
We're talking with Jill Gonzalez, who is an analyst and spokesperson with Wallet Hub, about financial resolutions, how to keep them in 2017. And we'd love to hear about your resolutions regarding your pocketbook, your personal finances. How is it going in day 10? 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We talked earlier about credit reports and credit monitoring, Jill. Now we can get to resolution number 6, which is to improve our credit scores by 20 points. How achievable is that goal?
Again, a realistic goal here. So 20 points is an amount by which pretty much everyone can improve their scores regardless of where you're starting from. So that credit score improvement then has the potential to save you a lot of money on everything from loans to new lines of credit to insurance premiums, apartment rentals. I don't think enough people realize how many people look at your credit score now. Even potential employers are now taking a look at it. So raising it shouldn't just be an idea of, hey, my credit score is this, I want it to be this, and that'll make me feel better. That has an immediate impact on the rest of your life. So that's why we say, one, improve it, and then have some sort of goal. 20 points is very realistic for everyone. If you want to then go beyond that and say, right now I have poor credit, I want to raise it to fair. I have fair credit, I want to raise it to good. You know, that's something that you can then do in these 20-point increments.
But it feels a little bit out of our hands. What are some things that anybody, regardless of their financial situation, can do to up their score and it will work?
So one, again, goes back to checking that credit report, making sure that there are no errors or inaccuracies. 25% of people will have one. So that already can help you here, and that will raise it by a lot more than 20 points. The second here is really making sure that you're on time with your payments. Even correcting 2 or 3 payments, having them on time in a row, will shape up your credit score. So that's over the course of 3 months. You should give it 3 to 6 months to see a real change here.
And a perfect credit score is considered to be 850, which less than 1% of people have. Is this a goal that we should strive for, or is it not necessary to aim so high as perfect?
I would not say that aiming for an 850 here is a good goal or a realistic goal. I would say that aiming eventually for excellent credit, which is up in the 700s, is a good goal. That will get you those longer 0% interest periods on balance transfer cards as well as new everyday purchase cards. If you see those commercials or you get the offers for great rewards, 6% cash back on certain items, 5% cash back, those are usually offers that are eligible for excellent credit holders only. So, you know, really striving for those things can be good, but an 850, I would say, is not a necessary goal.
Okay, Jill, so did you make a financial resolution in 2017, and how is it going?
I certainly did. I'm focusing on, again, paying myself first, so really adding money to that rainy day fund. I'd like to have at least 6 months take-home income by the end of this year. So 2 years ago, that was not at all my goal, right? So I'm just trying to build on things that have already happened and that hopefully I can do by the end of 2017. So I'm trying to be realistic here.
How will that make you feel to get to the end of 2017 and see that number and have that 6 months in the bank?
Yeah, it's a real sense of accomplishment. I mean, and that can be said for any goal here. But to know that you have something to fall back on, to know that you can breathe a little bit easier in the following year, maybe focus on a different goal, I think is such a good feeling. So, you know, that's something that I'm going to be striving toward. I know for different people, it's finances, for different people, it's fitness. But a lot of times, and we'll talk about this too, it's all very interrelated. So these financial goals make you emotionally feel a lot better, too.
Yeah, you can feel that stability, I suppose. We're talking with Jill Gonzalez of Wallet Hub about your financial resolutions. What are some good ones to put out there for 2017 in terms of your personal finance? And what is actually achievable? How important is it to have financial resolutions in your life? And, you know, can you keep them? Can you get to that goal? And then where do you go next? It is On Your Money on this Tuesday morning. I'm Kate Archer Kent, in for Joy. Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. Let us know about your 2017 resolutions. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well. Another point in the resolutions from Wallet Hub, wallet literacy, getting an A in wallet literacy. A 2016 Standard & Poor's study showed that only 57% of American adults are financially literate, which ties with Switzerland for 14th in the world. What does this say to you, Jill?
Yeah, wallet literacy really comprises a lot of different things here. So it relates to your own finances. It relates how your children manage money, you know, what you can pass on to them, everything from understanding the basics of taxes to knowing more about insurance premiums, what affects them, what goes into making a credit score, et cetera. I would guess that many people don't actually understand a lot of those things. And that's not necessarily 100% our fault, right? A lot of times we just simply don't learn the basics in high school even. So we're hoping that that changes over time. But in the meantime, you need to take it upon yourself to educate yourself and really understand what goes into your financial house. And that's what we mean by wallet literacy. So understanding that, you know, when you are going through your bills, when you're looking at different late fees or why was this fee assessed, what is this fee, should I be switching accounts, you know, having a basic knowledge and understanding of what these things are and how you can avoid them will obviously help other things like your budget, et cetera.
Well, becoming financially literate can take time. Are there resources out there that can get us up to speed on personal finance that are easy to digest for someone who might not have an economics background and who might not know a lot about personal finance?
Absolutely. So we developed a wallet literacy quiz that's given at many universities so that you can at least get a baseline score. You don't have to guess what you got wrong. You know, it tells you and helps you understand as well. A lot of universities have their own financial literacy sections of their website that students and parents alike can both visit. And finally, there's a good chance that your bank has a financial literacy section with graphs, with infographics, with little videos as well, so that you can actually walk through what a lot of these things mean.
And we have that quiz, on Wallet Hub's website that tests our financial literacy. We have that posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's go to the phones with Crystal from Racine. Hi, Crystal.
Hi. One, I love the Joy Cardine Show and On Your Money. And Jill, I was just wondering, you had talked about free online credit monitoring services, but I have no idea which ones those are. Can you give some examples so I can look them up?
Absolutely. So Wallet Hub is one of them. Wallet Hub updates daily, so that's unlike any other site right now. That's a great one to check out. You get inquiry text right when someone makes a new inquiry, so if that wasn't you, you know right away. Another good one is Credit Karma that updates weekly, and there are also several things. Your bank, for instance, might offer credit monitoring, but on a slower rate, usually monthly. So, you know, it's not like you have to sign up for one. You can sign up for multiple because each one will monitor a different bureau or a combination of bureaus.
And Crystal, I want to ask you before you go here, did you make a resolution?
I haven't figured out exactly what my resolution is. I wanted to pay down my credit cards, but I haven't figured out, like, a goal to set yet. So I was thinking about that 20% she had mentioned earlier, that might be something realistic.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. Jill, there's the credit score and the credit reports, but we're also seeing credit cards give you your FICO score monthly or quarterly. Now, what is that score, and how does that relate to your credit report?
Absolutely. So there's two basic kinds of credit scores, your FICO score, which is used by a lot of banks, and your Vantage score, which is used by a lot of lenders as well. So those are the two main scores that you'll be hearing about. However, when you apply for a credit card, when you go for an insurance premium, all of these different lenders have their own proprietary algorithms that they use to determine your credit worthiness. So your credit score, according to Capital One, will not be the same as your credit score according to GEICO. So that's something good to know. There are thousands of scores out there. There are a couple that you can at least go by that any other score will typically mimic. So FICO and Vantage score are both of them, and it's good to know both.
And how much attention should we pay to that line graph we're seeing on our credit card statement that shows our FICO score and its fluctuations?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. So knowing your score is important, but what's more important is knowing your progress, knowing which way you're trending. Is your score going up month after month? Is it kind of plateauing? Is it, of course, going down? So that's really what you should be paying attention to, you know, your progression over time here. And if you do see a dip, if you see it going the opposite way, it's then important to know why. Is it that new line of credit you opened? Did you perhaps close a credit card, which a lot of people do? Usually not the smartest thing. It's one thing to stop using your credit card if you know that you shouldn't be putting any more money on it. It's another thing to close one of your longest accounts. That actually would have a negative impact on your score. So it's really good to pay attention to what is going on there.
Let's go to the phones again with Jean from Milwaukee. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. I have a question for Jill. What the effects would be if it's on timeshares, if you just stop your maintenance fee, what would that do to your credit score?
Well, that's going to depend on if it's through a specific lender. So I would say if you still keep that open, if you still keep that line open, then it would have a very minimal effect on your credit score itself. So, you know, it's important to know what's tied to your bank account, to a deposit account, which would not show on your credit score, versus something that's tied to a lender that would have an impact. So I would say, you know, cutting off that line of credit, that would have a huge effect. Cutting down on the fees or the amount of money there really would not have a huge effect.
And Jean, did you make a personal finance resolution in 2017?
Well, we're trying to get rid of these timeshare fees, and we don't know their maintenance fees to keep this timeshare that we've already paid for years ago, but you have to pay these fees every year, and we own three timeshares, and it's quite spendy. every month, or once a year you have to pay this timeshare fee, maintenance fee. So it's like, get rid of them.
Without damaging your credit score.
Correct.
Yeah, so that can be tricky, Jill?
I would say that doesn't sound like it's tied to your credit. I would have to see which lender it goes through, but it sounds like if you've already paid it off, then it would have no effect on your credit. So not everything is directly tied to credit. Any loans that you have, yes. Any credit cards that you have, yes. Mortgage, et cetera. But basic bank accounts are not. A lot of these things that you might be paying year after year are not necessarily tied to your credit. Now, if you'll get in trouble for not paying them, if you're sent to collections, that would have a negative effect on your credit. So as long as you go through the basic steps that whoever, should be getting this money knows that you're no longer paying and there's an understanding in place, then I would say, it really would not harm you at all.
We're talking with Wallet Hub analyst Jill Gonzalez on this edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley is away this week, as is Joy, and I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How financially literate are you? Do you know if your financial resolutions are practical for your situation? Let's explore our best intentions for our financial health at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll be back in a moment. You're finding us on the Ideas Network. Is budget a scary word for you? Does it fill you with dread? Does budget carry a lot of baggage? Let's consider a better approach to tackling your budget in 2017. We're digging into the topic of financial resolutions this hour with our On Your Money guest, Jill Gonzalez. She's an analyst and spokesperson for Wallet Hub. We came across Wallet Hub's blog entry about the top 10 financial resolutions for 2017. Let's hear more about your resolutions. Perhaps Jill can help you tailor your financial resolutions to make them more realistic. 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Jill, we've got several more resolutions to cover in this final segment. You say we need to focus more on our physical health this year to help keep our spending down. Give us an idea of how much money we spend on our health each year.
The average person spends over $4,300 on healthcare each year when you're looking at premiums, deductibles, et cetera. And that's almost 10% of your total annual expenditure. So we've focus a lot on healthcare every year, and depending on if you're really focusing on it, that number can only go up. So we want to not really be adding to any of our debt, to any of our expenditures when it comes to health.
Do you have any thoughts on whether we should buy a workout DVD, eat more salad, or buy a gym membership perhaps and really get serious about it, which may also involve shelling out more cash?
Well, there are smart ways to do all of those things. And one thing that a lot of people don't know about, it's like a silver sneakers program on some insurance programs, but oftentimes this is available for anyone on many insurance programs, that you pay a $25 monthly fee, which is a lot more affordable than many gyms. I'm coming to you from D.C., that would buy you about an hour in a gym. There are programs that if you pay that monthly fee, you actually get access to hundreds of gyms and weight loss centers in your area. You can just walk in, show your insurance card, and you're good to go. So a lot of people don't know about those programs. I definitely urge you to check out your insurance provider and see what their offering is here. There are smart ways to make these fitness goals work for you while sticking to your budget.
And losing weight and eating healthy, always popular New Year's resolutions. Are there any tips you have to help us stick to these goals that perhaps from a financial perspective would give us more insight on how we can achieve these goals?
Yeah, I mean, make small, healthy changes. Again, be realistic here. Whether it's small changes to your diet, whether you're increasing exercise in very small increments, if it's via standing desk, if it's via walking to the next bus stop or the next metro stop, if it's, you know, walking more at work, taking a little bit of a break every day, just practicing yoga or meditation, you know, small steps like that that all can be done at no or a very low cost will help you feel better. So, you know, those can then help you focus on the long term. Feeling better hopefully leads to wiser financial decisions that you can make with a clearer mind, a clearer head, etc. So it really is a snowball effect here. There's a very clear connection between physical, emotional, and financial health.
Let's go to the phones here with Ron from Appleton. Hi, Ron.
Hi, this is a great show. I had a question. I'm looking on buying a house and looking for, you know, getting into a mortgage, but I also have, like, you know, like 7 or 8 different sections of debt. I was planning on trying to get them all consolidated into the mortgage so I only have the one payment. How would that affect my financial state, like via my credit report or something like that?
Sure. So debt consolidation, depending on which avenue you use here, I think using your mortgage is actually a great idea. That will be good for your credit report. So essentially, all of these records of your other types of debt are going to stay on your credit report for up to 10 years. The good stuff stays on for 10 years. The bad stuff falls off after 7 unless it's a bankruptcy. So you'll still have records of those things. The credit history will remain on your report. So that is good here. And now focusing on your mortgage, that's now a new line of credit, which again will only be a benefit on your credit report. So your score should actually increase after you complete those steps.
And Ron, you're making a big life change here in buying a house. Do you have any resolutions in 2017?
Well, my goal is to get all my primary or my major bills, necessary bills, down to half of what we make in our monthly, you know, how much we make monthly. So it's like, so we make, you know, say $200 and we're only spending $100. On our major bill, so that way we have some kind of backup if one of us loses our job.
So you're really looking at the budget very carefully and right-sizing it, so to speak.
Right.
And Jill, you know, so many people, the word budget carries a not so pleasant connotation because it suggests, you know, a chore, a spreadsheet. It's not much fun bringing all that information together. How do you suggest we make this concept more appealing so that we're more likely to actually do it?
Yeah, this time of year, the word budget is scary. The word diet is scary. Think of it as simply a plan moving forward. You know, really try to look at everything that you've spent, try to move forward, make that list. Lists are a little bit more fun than spreadsheets, et cetera. Rank those expenses and then, you know, start crossing some things off or at first at least decreasing your spend. So if you see that your Starbucks or your Dunkin' Donuts bill is actually a lot more money than you thought when you look at it on a monthly basis and you can't live without it just yet,
busted.
Don't cross it off. Yeah, but make a plan to at least spend less at certain places.
Well, let's go to Jamie in Eagle River. Hi, Jamie.
Good morning. Thanks. Love the show. Speaking about budgets, there's been a number of people that called in and trying to figure out the best way of tracking their budget or syncing it with their bank account. And one thing that we've found is, you know, tracking your spending is one thing, but budgeting is another. And a program called You Need a Budget has totally changed and revolutionized pretty much our budget. And you can categorize all your spending. You put your income, all your expenses, and you budget for those individual categories. And instead of having all these different accounts, like, you know, your emergency fund and in a different savings account, you have it all in the budget, and you can see, like, right in front of you what your budget is at.
Jill, what do you know about You Need a Budget?
I'm very familiar. I think it's a great program. And I think it's a really good point that, yes, budgeting and tracking your spending are two different things. So unless you do anything with that information of where you have been spending and then actively decide to start changing that and, you know, cropping things out, then you're not budgeting. You're just tracking. So I think that is a very good point to make.
Yeah, taking strategic approach to budgeting. Thank you so much, Jamie, for that tip on You Need a Budget. Let's go to Carrie from Racine. Hi, Carrie.
Hi there. I'm a bankruptcy attorney, and I'm calling because what I want to say is that I see most often is that people use debit cards and they do not keep track of their spending. Banks earned over $30 billion with B in fees, overdraft fees this past year. I have clients who are coming in and they have $742 in overdraft fees. They don't read their bank statements. So as far as I'm concerned, especially for people who are having a hard time managing their money, need to use cash because debit cards are just a terrible problem.
What would you say about that, Jill, with watching all of the fees going on in the background?
Absolutely. So this is another great point. There are so many fees attached to checking accounts in both overdrafting and how much money you need to keep in there and maintenance fees that people don't even know about when signing up for them. Debit cards, obviously, attached here, the same thing. And now prepaid cards are also becoming a huge issue. A lot of times, people with poor or fair credit here are using prepaid cards like a debit card, and there are even more fees attached there. They really do get into this revolving debt program where they're actually just trying to save money, right, to be better with their money. So I would agree completely. Use cash as much as possible. It seems like we're living in a world that is quickly becoming cashless, but, you know, still here, and it's here for a reason. So people should be using that to really create their own debt relief program.
Well, last but not least, resolution number 10 from Wallet Hub, which is to look for a better job. Are you suggesting everybody do this or only certain people? What's up with this resolution?
I think that around New Year's, when a lot of people make this resolution, you know, to remedy their job situation, I mean, we get so caught up in spending less, saving more, that a lot of times we either don't want to or forget to address the other side of the equation. How much are we actually earning? How much are we bringing in? So obviously, trading up career-wise is not as simple as some of these other resolutions or just scouring local job postings and picking one. You really need to work at it. You might need to even switch up your living situation in terms of your apartment, in terms of renting, in terms of, especially if you're younger, your roommate situation, and really look at the higher wages or a lower cost of living in general.
And before we let you go, any final words of wisdom for those of who have vowed to be more financially fit in the new year?
Absolutely. So we talked about being realistic, you know, we talked about really working at this. But the common misconception with resolutions is that you either get your goal or you don't. If you fall off track, you can hop right back on. This isn't, hey, I made it to February, better luck next year. You have the power to get back on track.
Jill, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
Jill Gonzalez is an analyst for Wallet Hub. We talked with her about the site's 10 financial resolutions for 2017. We can continue this conversation on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Post your financial victories and your setbacks. Thanks to producers Bill Martins and Brianne Chasseau for helping us keep our financial house in order, and to technical director Michelle Good. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network.